The county and the city operate under permits, existing waterbird permits, and they are discharging, their jurisdictions or operations are discharging fecal indicator bacteria. Okay. So they will be required to demonstrate compliance with the TMDL and the base plan amendments through their existing waterbird permits. So they're not necessarily a third party. They're actually an implementing party or a responsible party. Yeah.
And are they only responsible for the discharges from their jurisdiction?
That's correct. For example, from within the MS4 jurisdictional area.
Oh, the MS4, yeah. Okay. What about man-made waterways or ditches and things? Is the governing body of those, are they somehow responsible? If they don't own the land or aren't doing anything, you know, to discharge, but the people who do it, the grazers or whoever, the homeless people, are discharging into the waterway, is there some responsibility on the part of the waterway owner?
For constructed ditches or water conveyance features that are within MS4 jurisdictions, the responsible party would be, for example, the city or the MS4 permittee. For areas outside of MS4 jurisdictions, I'm not aware of who owns, and I don't think we analyze this, who owns, you know, specific water conveyance structures. What we identified as sources were non-point source categories,
right,
which would be associated with owners and operators of the lands proximal or adjacent to those water conveyance features or ditches. So the owners and operators of those source categories, for example, grazing lands, ranchettes, okay, lands with homeless encampments, would be the responsible parties.
So then who is this third party you were talking about who would be sending out notices, that we were trying to get to send out notices?
That's a great question. The non-point source policy allows us to utilize third parties as sort of, I guess.
You just drag them in off the street?
Yeah.
Or, I mean, who are they?
only if they can demonstrate a few things. So the non-point source policy allows us to use a third party sort of as a go-between, if you will, between water board and the actual people who are responsible, like in this case, ranchers. So an example would be like Resource Conservation District, NRCD. But we would have to, in order for that third party to really be utilized, really, under the non-point source policy, we would really have to feel very comfortable that the relationship that we have with the RCD is one of good verification that the TMDL is being implemented and that water quality objectives are on the road to being achieved.
Okay.
So it's a relationship that has to be developed, for which there is a mutual understanding between us and that third party, and that third party and ranchers.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mr. Jeffries.
I've heard the mechanism of the TMDL, but the mechanism to implement the rest of it, because you look at these tributaries that flow from large grazing areas down through irrigated ag lands, and then you have many ranches, and then you have cities and smaller communities. You have homes that have septic tanks along these tributaries. How do we identify this contamination and where it's coming from? And I hope that we don't lay this on to the large landowners, because I think you'll find most of your large grazing facilities are already taking care of their problems historically. It's a small community that's alongside of a tributary. Then you have the ag waivers that are mixed within this TMDL, and then you have the stormwater permits from the city of Salinas and Gonzales, and then you have the counties. How does this roadmap all lay out? Because when you wind up in a lagoon, all these tributaries come through all these particular areas in that lagoon area. Now, the city of Salinas, I'm sure you heard on the, when we had the stormwater permits, all the contamination was coming from agriculture. All the contamination come into the city of Salinas was coming from agriculture. That was
Affecting their stormwater.
Affecting their stormwater.
Program.
That was their perspective.
Yeah. That's their perspective. Now, you take the farmers in west of Salinas that have the results of this traveling through the city of Salinas will say all the contamination is coming from the city of Salinas. So how do we break this all down? Where is the roadmap? It's easy to say we're going to create a TMDL, but when you got all these other factions that make up this gigantic area that we're trying to look at and clean up the water, where do we start? How do we start? And who do we start with?
Right. Such is the conundrum of non-point sources, dispersed sources. And you have multiple land uses, multiple sources in a watershed where you have not only major water bodies, but you have numerous tributaries.
Well, just one more comment.
Sure.
And our colleague John Hayashi is not here today, but yeah. I'm sure you heard loud and clear, and I kind of echoed some of his concerns about illegal homeless encampments on private property that maybe the landowner is aware of or not aware of. Maybe it's an absentee landowner, and then they become responsible for that. Maybe the property is posted, maybe it isn't posted for trespassing. So what are we going to do with those homeless encampments on private property? Now, I can understand in city property, the city has ordinance prohibiting those type of things.
Right.
But in the rural area, on private property, to have homeless encampments along the Salinas River, if you want to be specific, how do we control that?
Right.
Who's responsible? Is Monterey County Water Resources Agency responsible for that? Is Monterey County responsible for that? Is the adjacent landowner responsible for that? So I think, the thought process needs to be expanded. It's a large area to look at and to be able to say we're going to do this or that, but I think the people out there in the area are saying and scratching their head, how are we going to accomplish this?
Yeah, let me address the first part of your comment, and then perhaps Pete can do the homeless part. With respect to non-point sources, and you have varying land uses and varying discharges, you have agriculture, you have the ranching, you have stormwater, and not only within ranching, then you also have the ranchettes and so on. Right? We understand that. Again, that is the difficulty of non-point sources when you have a pollutant or a constituent like this, bacteria, where there are literally thousands of sources in the watershed. Two things. Because it's complicated, we don't throw up our hands and say, well, let's not do anything until we have it all figured out. We think that we can start moving now. We think that we know enough about what the sources are, the non-point sources, so that we can start moving today. And we feel that as we begin implementing and as we begin working some things out with respect to different sources like ranching and like agriculture and like stormwater, that we're going to learn along the way. So that's one thing. I think we know enough to begin. And then the other thing is that is why I'm proposing that whatever we work out, whatever the program looks like at the end of the day to address the ranching sources, I think it's important that the reporting mechanism include the management measures that they're taking on property, because those management measures, if we have some specifics about the management measures that they're taking, then we can do some estimates about the load reductions so that we can see success. We might not be able to actually measure by tipping a bottle in the surface water next week or next month or maybe even next year. But if we begin to implement and begin to estimate the load and reductions as a result of those management measures that we're tracking, then we can start documenting success. And I think that as we go, so with that adaptive strategy and with documenting success in terms of management measures and tracking those management measures, that we will learn along the way and we will be marching towards success.
Mr. Chair, I have one more question.
Sure.
And I don't know if this particular staff can answer that. Maybe Mr. Briggs can. But Monterey County Resources Agency has put a rubber dam in down the lower end of Salinas River. And they're pumping water, or going to pump water, out of the river into this dam, which is eventually going to be used in agricultural land. If we have all these contaminants in that particular part of the Salinas River, which is, this is close to Lagoon, and all this is flowing to that area, do we have any idea what the Water Resources Agency is doing to clean that water up before it's put on agricultural land? Because you have E. coli, you have a lot of contaminants, plus fecal chloroform. All these things, and this kind of brought it, driving down, thinking about this particular item on the agenda today, that kind of popped up in my mind. What are we doing to make sure that these contaminants are not placed on agricultural land, where the agriculture is then going to be criticized and blame for the contamination on their lands? So, and I don't know if you have the answer or not, but I'd like to have the answer, and I would hope the staff would provide us with that, because I think that's critical, it's important.
Perhaps Mr. Briggs can help me, or anybody else here, but my take is, by speaking with some of the growers, frankly, I would be surprised. I would be surprised if growers in the Lower Salinas Valley would be pumping surface water and putting it on their crops. I'd be surprised if they would do that.
Well, but that's my understanding. That's what they're planning on doing. They're not.
Yeah.
I see somebody shaking their head. No.
Yeah.
But
I'm skeptical about that, quite frankly.
I would hope not.
Yeah.
Without some kind of,
I'm sorry,
filtration. I didn't interrupt you.
No, quite all right. Because as we've been developing these TMDLs and have considered whether or not irrigated agriculture is a source of bacteria, one of the things that has been crystal clear to us is that the growers don't, by and large, take surface waters to irrigate their crops, and because they know about the food safety issues, frankly.
Yep.
So again, I would be surprised if somebody took a survey about all the growers in the Lower Salinas Valley and which ones thought that they might be using surface waters to irrigate. I would be very surprised if you had any number of them that were planning on doing that.
Well, that's what the general public understanding is.
Yeah.
Well, we can check on that.
Yeah.
I agree that that's asking for trouble. I was just talking with Matt Keeling late yesterday about that project, but I don't know what the treatment train is, but we can find out. Going back to one of your points about how to ferret out the different sources, as Chris said, it's complicated in the watershed. However, as far as the issue of municipalities versus upstream agriculture or other sources, you might recall that with the Salinas stormwater permit, we did design the monitoring program to have upstream and downstream monitoring points so that it should be possible, is possible, to discern what's coming into the city limits from upstream sources and then what happens as it goes through the city. And that was designed to be compatible with CCAMP, Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program, which Karen Worster is going to be talking about in the next item, as well as the cooperative monitoring program by agriculture.
Yes, that's true. Thank you, Mr. Briggs. That's the way the Lower Salinas River watershed is laid out. There are some predominant land uses that we have monitoring points for that we can parse some of the sources out that way.
Don't we have some TMDLs that are in the implementation phase, where we have these non-permitted sources of contamination. This isn't the first time we've had to consider ranches or ranching or rangeland.
Right.
Right?
Right.
So where is staff in terms mm-hmm. of looking at this issue going back to those older TMDLs? What have mm-hmm. you done with that?
Right. Actually, we have, memory serves, like seven. But all of them have been approved within the last 2 years, and only one of those have been approved all the way through EPA. So what we expect in the next 3 to 5 months is that probably about four of them will be approved all the way up the line. So the ones that were approved a year and a half ago by this board are just now making their way through State Board and OAL, Office of Administrative Law, and EPA.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So now the time is nigh. You know, now is a good time for us to be doing this.
Yeah. What might be helpful for us, tell me if staff could do this at some point in the future for the board as a presentation. Maybe you could take this part of this watershed, you know, that dumps into the Elkhorn Slough area, just as an example, and do kind of a graphic representation. Map-wise, showing how we regulate all of these parcels, you know, I mean, using the NPDES system, using the WDR system, now using the non-point source system. And it seems to me that we have some mechanisms to essentially get to every piece of land we need to within our region. But we just have this patchwork of different permits and control mechanisms.
Mm-hmm. Were you talking about with respect to bacteria, TMDLs? Or?
No, just generally regulate the discharge of waste from land. Almost like a colorized map.
Okay.
I mean, does staff have anything like that it's conceptualized over time? You know,
for
look at a watershed, and you know, you could identify all the point sources with NPDES permits, because that's pretty easy, and you know what that is regulating. Then you've got the MS4s and the stormwater permits. Those are defined geographic areas, and that would almost tell you, once you start to do that, hey, these areas are not falling within any current regulatory scheme, except if we know there's a threat to water quality. Someone reports it to us, you know, if there's an unpermitted spill or something like that.
So a geographic representation,
land
that is being regulated, and what that source of regulation is, or what that mechanism is.
Right, kind of instructional for us too.
I see.
And you know, for the public.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make any sense? Mr. Briggs, do you guys know what I'm talking about?
I think it's sort of, I know what you're talking about, but I think it's sort of problematic in that a lot of our regulation is to uses, not parcels of land, even though those uses take place on land.
Yeah.
I mean, a parcel of land may be in the forested area of our region, but maybe they're not foresting, so then it wouldn't show up. Even though if they do start foresting, then all of a sudden they would show up. So I'm not sure how effective that would be. I mean, everything in our region is under the forest or the timber waiver, but only when they start doing a timber harvest. So,
but we do have land sort of use difficult. Maps, and there's one right there for
For example,
watershed.
Yes, for example, I think a land use map kind of gets at what you're talking about, where the pink or salmon colored areas are the urban areas, and these would be your MS4 permit boundaries, essentially. Castroville also, some of this urbanized area in El Toro Creek. Now, for the non-point sources, which would be subject to the prohibition, for example, the yellow, the grazing lands, or even ranchettes down here on the valley floor would be sort of subject, at least for the fecal coliform TMDL, would be subject to the prohibitions. So I don't know if the land use map kind of gets at a little bit of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It does, and you know, I won't ask any more questions about that. I'll deal with that after the board meeting. Okay. Any other board questions at this point in time? Should we go to our speakers?
Oh,
we've got just one card for this item. Darlene Din. Thank you, Chris and Pete, for that.
Thank you. As a housekeeping item, I just wanted to let you know that Kurt Schmidt, who is with Preservation Inc., called me on my way down here, and he had airplane trouble. He will be coming. Kevin Merrill is here to speak on that. And that item, my understanding, was discussed, some of it, the data and the issues that have already been addressed, and he would like to be able to be heard later at public comment. Is that fine?
We haven't taken that up yet.
Thank you. Just verifying that, since we missed it. And
in fact, all that's going to be taken up in the executive officer's report, all the ag-related issues.
Thank you very much. Okay. For the purpose of clarification, I wanted to thank you for that consideration.
Okay.
Now, and the purpose of the TMDL. My name is Darlene Din, and thank you for giving me the opportunity to address you. I work in various opportunities within the agricultural community. I'd like to address a couple things. And one of my hats that I wear is involving on the projects with the CSIP, which is the water that will be used in the rubber dam and within the Salinas River. Please do get the reports from Monterey County. They do not give untreated water into any. It's completely run through that system that has been very professional for many years, and I believe that your agency has received data reports on that, and there is no direct surface water out of that project. So I just strongly ask you to do that for the board to have and to know that that is properly managed.
Can I interrupt you for just a second?
Oh, yes, thank you.
We, of course, receive data from the Monterey Regional Water Pollution Control Agency as far as the recycle project and the Castroville Irrigation project.
And that's running through that.
We have requirements for that. I guess the question was that, and I didn't know.
The rubber dam is completely required by statute to go into that filtration system under the same.
Okay.
And so I just, for the purpose of clarification, so that you knew that while that is a water supply project and while it is a surface water project and while they did have to go through all of the environmental and CEQA and NEPA and all the requirements and under NOAA Fisheries and your board, that is completely run under that same permit. There is no direct irrigation, just to help the board to know and be comfortable.
I just wasn't up to speed to that. I knew they were going to be using the irrigation infrastructure.
Completely.
But I wasn't up to speed on the treatment. And from what Mr. Jeffries is saying, it sounds like the general public, for some reason, has some misinformation about that as well.
And you know what? I wrote a huge big note. Mr. Weeks and I are going to have quite a discussion this afternoon. Thank you, Mr. Jeffries. I think it's really important that it's clearly understood by the public.
Okay, I'm going to
start
the
clock. I apologize. I just wanted to make sure. I didn't want you to go home tonight and be worried. Okay, thank you. As it relates to this, the first point on this I'd like to open up is a consultant for agriculture, and in this case ranching, is that the culture of ranching is really important, is that they are land stewards, and they're a unique piece of the agricultural system, that they do not apply irrigation water, they don't apply inputs, they graze land and manage land, which is a benefit in the watershed. That one of the main values that for this board on water quality is well-maintained grazing land. Not only does it give an environmental impact in an important way to having endangered species, even though there may be some trade-offs, that I would ask when you look at any implementation plan that you do look at them as a benefit. The second point that is concerning to me is the RCD and the NRCS works with ranchers and growers, and in this you would want to be caution you to be very careful on not making them an arm of the regional board or making them a quasi-regulatory. That would vis-a-vis cause challenges with them being able to assist a rancher in being able to implement a plan. So I would just caution on how that moves forward. And NRCS especially has a responsibility in their congressional order of confidentiality in different issues. And so I just would ask you to be sensitive to that. Cost of monitoring to a rancher is very different than irrigated ag because of the cow-calf rate on the amount of grazing land to an operation. Oh, sorry. That is a huge issue. The last thing I would just like to say, that you continue to work on that. Staff has met, and this is a really challenging time to get our arms around it. Do please look at the ranchers in a way that is different as the managers, as they do provide a water quality benefit. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Okay, that was our last speaker on this item. Mr. Briggs?
Any final thoughts on the recommendation?
I just wanted to address Ms. Dinn's, a couple of Ms. Dinn's comments. She said something to the effect of that be careful that the NRCS and RCDs, that we don't look at them and think of them and put them in a position of being an extension of the water board. We understand that very clearly. We've been discussing potential relationships with the RCD and on RCS, and we're very sensitive to that issue. Thank you, Ms. Dinn. Cost of compliance, as Pete mentioned, in Attachment 7, you will see that Pete gave an estimation about what the total cost for the agricultural portion of this TMDL is. And then finally, Ms. Dinn mentioned something about please continue to visit the ranches and be in communication with the ranchers. We couldn't agree more. That's exactly what we intend to do. And then with that, we propose recommendation.
Yes, I agree with what Chris said, and I echo that. And again, we do recommend adoption of this proposed amendment, and we maintain that we'll have it will address a significant water quality impairment in the Central Coastal region's probably the most bacteria impaired watersheds.
Okay, we have a recommendation before us.
I'll move staff recommendation.
Okay.
I think they've done a great job.
Yeah. Okay.
I will second.
Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay. The motion carries. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
I think at some point we'll be interested to learn how you are going to get your hands around the not traditional, unpermitted public with respect to this. Yeah.
Yes, so. Thank you. So do we.
All right. We can talk later about what would be helpful and educational for the board in terms of some of the things you brought up.
Okay.
In discussion.
Good. All right. Thank you, too, very much. Let's.
You want to take 5 or 10, and that'll give Karen a chance to get
okay
set up.
So our next item, when we return, will be item 19, the Central Coast Ambient Monitoring Program website update. And we're going to take a 10 or 15 minute break.